Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for Tuesday, August 8th. I'm Alan Chartok. Tensions between North Korea and the U.S. continue to rise after the United Nations approved a new package of sanctions on the reclusive regime following North Korean missile tests. Here to discuss the issues is Stephen Lebo of the Sage Colleges. We will want to hear from you. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And there are many other ways to do it. You could write to us at voxpop@wmc.org. Stephen Lebo, a distinguished professor who knows all about this stuff. Your calls and emails coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. As global pressure increases against North Korea with a new package of sanctions, the rogue nation is blaming the United States and threatening, quote, ultimate measures in response. The UN Security Council unanimously approved the new sanctions over the weekend, which are aimed at cutting roughly a third of North Korea's annual export revenue. The move comes after North Korea tested two intercontinental ballistic missiles last month. Here to discuss the situation, and we're lucky to have him on the Korean Peninsula, is Stephen Lebo of the Sage Colleges. Stephen is the Sherman David Specter Professor of International History and Politics at the Sage Colleges and an associate in research at Harvard University. He specializes in the relationship between Asia and the West. Stephen's also a WAMC commentator. Stephen, welcome. And while I say that, I see this gigantic book in front of me, East and Southeast Asia by Stephen Lebo. It's in its 49th edition. This is 2016-17. Very attractive book, and you've been writing this every year, right?
Well, I've been writing this since the mid-90s, and it literally every year you talk about what has changed in North Korea, South Korea, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Let's open it up for before people get on the phones, and one's on already, but North Korea. Everybody has a number of things that we could or shouldn't be doing. The number one thing you keep hearing is getting China to do the dirty work. China just voted for the North Korean sanctions in the United Nations and the Security Council, so we have to assume that they have their own frustrations with North Korea, yes?
Oh, well there's no question that Beijing is very unhappy with North Korea. They have very publicly talked about regime change. But the bottom line is that the American perception that China has an enormous amount of influence over North Korea, and particularly over something that they consider fundamental to their national survival, is phenomenally, I think, exaggerated. China is not going to and doesn't have the power to influence North Korea the way we think it does. And the fact of the matter is, we have almost no options in terms of what's going on right now.
That would be the way it seems to me.
But I would put the situation in some way as kind of positive. In one sense, it's scary. We're told, and it seems likely to be the case, that North Korea finally has the ability to send an ICBM with a weaponized nuclear weapon toward the United States. Now, in one sense, that's kind of terrifying. On the other hand, it's kind of positive. And that might seem odd, but we survived, you and I, for the last half century of the 20th century on what was called mutually assured destruction. Now, there's a certain kind of precarious moment when the United States might have tried to intervene and set off God knows what kind of explosion in North Korea to stop this fact. But where are we right now? They appear to already have the power, so what are we going to do? We are going to, whether we like it or not, have to settle into a recognition that North Korea, like India and Pakistan and Russia and China before it, have nuclear weapons, are in a position to threaten us. And that is in some ways kind of calming. And I mean calming because that door has closed, apparently. And any kind of anxious anxiety we have about doing it before they arrive at this point may well be over. That can also open up a door to more stability rather than less.
Okay, so I disagree with you, but that's not unusual.
Well, of course.
We're allowed to do that. Basically, the question is, when I say to my wife, to Roselle, wonderful Roselle, I say, don't leave the car door unlocked. She says, I've been leaving it unlocked for 46
yeah.
for all these years, and I've never been robbed. And I always say, yeah, it only takes once and it's only a first time. The question about Mr. Kim is whether or not he's crazy enough to risk annihilation of his entire country by setting one of these
loops
off.
Well, why don't we just look at the community of people that know Kim Jong-un best?
Yes.
And the simple fact is those are the South Korean people. I was just chatting with an academic from South Korea a few minutes ago. The South Koreans know North Korea, and they know what we know. It is a dictatorial, vicious regime. Kim Jong-un himself murdered his uncle, killed his half-brother. All of that is real. But who are the South Koreans worried about right now? It is not Kim Jong-un. They are worried about the United States being led by someone who is enormously poorly educated and clearly unstable. That is who they are worried about in South Korea. Not they are not looking to the North.
Okay, so what are they
worried
about?
They're looking toward the United States.
Okay, so what are they worried about?
They're worried about the United States doing something that might provoke an assault, probably across the border at Panmunjom. They are just a few minutes away from massive North Korean soldiers. I've been on that border. You know, when I was on that border, I literally had to sign a piece of paper saying I wouldn't, which sounds a little odd, sue the American army if I was killed by the North Koreans. They have an incredible border. It's a bus ride away. And their circumstance, they know North Korea. They know North Korea blisters, but they mostly know that North Korea is concerned about not attacking them, but their own survival.
Well, when you
what
compare,
they don't know is what is going on in the United States.
Stephen, when you compare India and Pakistan with North Korea, that's really not apt, I don't think.
No, a better description would have been 1964 when China set off the nuclear bomb, and America was terrified that Mao Zedong's crazy Red Guards world had nuclear weapons and developing missiles and things of that sort. We actually, there's a whole thing related to the Soviet interest in trying to intervene. But the bottom line is, what does North Korea want? What do nuclear weapons mean to North Korea?
Okay, what do they want?
Survival. North Korea has spent three quarters of a century seeing us as the enemy. The United States, even before the era of Trump, took out one of its major enemies, the Taliban Afghanistan, and then took out another of its major enemies, the regime of Saddam Hussein. North Korea, and this has been true for years, has seen itself threatened by the United States. And they know that had the Taliban or Saddam Hussein had nuclear weapons, that history that passed after that would not have occurred. For them, nuclear weapons are about survival.
And, what about,
and they have managed to arrive at that point, apparently.
And what about regime change? I mean, one of the things we keep hearing is that Kim is concerned about being kicked out, and that's why he has to do all this stuff.
Well, first of all, Kim is not doing anything different than his grandfather Kim Il-sung or his father Kim Jong-il. There's no difference. Now, I would tell you, as someone who follows this close enough to rewrite that chapter on North Korea every 12 months, that in the first couple of months, so this is now several years ago, I thought there was a very good chance that Kim Jong-un would be pushed aside. He was quite young, ill-prepared, and I thought the military would establish themselves. And I thought there was a good chance. He was threatening everybody. Nobody in the inner circle could feel comfortable or safe. But he survived that. He managed, frankly, to fool me, and he's turned out to be as good a survivor as his father and his grandfather of a regime that wants to survive. That's what those nuclear weapons are about. And frankly, if I were leading North Korea, an autocratic or a democratic one, and America was out there with its record, I would get nuclear weapons as well.
Let's go to Gerald in Ulster Park. Okay, Gerald, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm looking back in history to Bill Clinton's days and remembering that the grandfather of the guy who's there now and Bill Clinton had worked out an agreement which seemed like it could work. North Koreans, as I recall, were to put their development of nuclear stuff on hold, which I believe they did for a time. And the Americans were to supply some type of fuel to replace the atomic power that would be missing if they didn't develop their atomic efforts. And we did supply some oil, but we didn't follow through with the rest of the stuff that was to come after, and also we didn't follow through with trying to normalize relations with North Korea. And then one of the reasons we didn't do it is because we had Republicans in the Congress at the time who were not even willing to pay the United States dues to the UN. We were a couple of years behind, I guess, on UN dues at the time. So they're not paying the dues. Well, there's no way they're going to pay money for North Korea to have some subsidization in the terms of energy. Meanwhile, Bill Clinton had his own problems with impeachment.
Well,
Hold on a second. Gerald. Me moderator, you not. I'm going to ask you a real last fast question. We're coming up against the break, so we have to ask the professor here. Go ahead.
Well, basically, almost everything you said is correct. In the transition from Kim Il-sung to Kim Jong-il, the North Korean regime, in the middle of a time of horrendous famine, started to try and open up the world. There was an opening to Jimmy Carter later on, and under Clinton, Madeleine Albright, the Secretary of State, went. That regime was trying to open up. Now, Bill Clinton managed to create that agreed framework, also with a threat in place of an attack, but it worked out. You are right about the fuel. There were food deliveries. You were correct with the issue of Americans undermining Clinton for that effort. But what basically happened was that momentum that was built up under Kim Dae-jung of South Korea and Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung earlier, he died in the middle of all this, was stopped when George W. Bush came to power. George W. Bush came to power, undermined his own Secretary of State, Colin Powell at the time, who said he was going to continue the momentum of the Clinton administration, and then sort of was sawed off at the knees by saying that. And then it reversed. And you're right. We got pretty close to improving relations, calming of developments, and then the directions turned in yet another path. You were absolutely right with almost everything you said.
And you know what? We'll never know. We really won't know. You're right.
You may have the momentum continued.
You may be right.
North Korea was in a situation, we're talking about the late 1990s, horrendous economic problems. The Soviet Union was not in a position to help them. China was starting to sell them rather than give them goods. And North Korea made an effort to open up of the sort of opening of Deng Xiaoping, Doi Moi in Vietnam. And then they went the other direction again, of isolation pushed along by the United States.
Okay, thank you.
Now, it started to reverse when George W. Bush was leaving office.
Okay, thank you, Gerald. And we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Wild Bird Junction, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, bird houses, bird baths, binoculars, nature gifts, and garden decor, where people and nature come together. WildBirdJunction.com. The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5, HydeCollection.org. Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionXLEyeCare.com. Bassett Healthcare, providing information on partial knee replacement at educational seminars across central New York. SayNoToKneePain.com for dates and locations. And Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, presenting Klezmer and Chinese, violinist Josh Sussman playing classic Israeli and Hasidic music, in addition to a Jewish art exhibit and Chinese dinner, August 9th at 7 p.m. at Saratoga Chabad. SaratogaJewishCulturalFestival.org for details.
With Stephen Lebo, and we're lucky to have him, I'll tell you that much. Stephen, let's take another call. The telephone number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are excellent to great. Let's go to Rod in Voorheesville. Rod, you're on.
Hi. I have a couple of questions and an observation or two. My observation is that in the history of the world, no nation has ever committed suicide. My second observation is that for North Korea to launch any kind of an attack on the United States. I mean, I'm getting so tired of this update each day. Well, they can reach Hawaii. Well, they can reach San Francisco. Oh, my God, they can reach Oshkosh, Wisconsin. That's all irrelevant. It would be suicide for North Korea to attack the United States. Nations don't do that. Therefore, they would not. It just puzzles me that when people talk about all these places that North Korea are, of course, it's never talked about as North Korea. It's always talking about Kim Jong-un. But eventually, it all comes down to, well, he's crazy. Well, number one, he may or may not be crazy. In any case, we are hardly the people to raise that issue.
Well, I wouldn't think that calling him crazy is kind of useless. What he is, though,
it's
and we know that, is
absolutely
vicious.
Useless.
But
it's
vicious is about
useless.
Defending.
Whoa. David, let him talk.
Yeah, vicious is about defending his position. He has been vicious in defending his position as he established himself after his father died, and that is as horrendous as it sounds. But the bottom line for himself as a person, the bottom line for that country is that leadership wants to survive, and they see nuclear weapons as a way to protect themselves, the only way to protect themselves from a country that has been committed to their destruction, as they understand it, for half a century. Remember, the last interaction we had with North Korea was the United States invading North Korea.
Yeah.
North Korea invaded South Korea, and then after we defeated the North Koreans in South Korea, after we had, shall we say, won the war, we invaded North Korea.
And we've had any number of subsequent invasions, and I don't believe North Korea has invaded anybody since 1953.
Well, North Korea has attacked and assaulted on a regular basis South Korea. There's no question that they are regularly very aggressive towards South Korea, which they see as our puppet. But the bottom line, nuclear weapons are a tool they see for their preservation.
Okay, Rod. Rod, we got a whole bunch of people behind you. We thank you for your call. Thanks a lot. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Chances of getting in now are excellent. We'll go to David in Johnstown. David in Johnstown, your turn.
Oh, thank you. Why don't we? Apparently, there was a drone over one of our ships. Why didn't we shoot it down like a surveillance plane? Is that provoking war?
Well, I heard about that. I don't know the specific decision and decision making on the plane. But if the United States is hoping to avoid a major clash, I would be delighted to hear that.
Oh, you would? Oh, good.
Oh, I would be delighted to hear that. We are talking about a massive potential assault on one of our closest allies. It is literally a bus ride. I've been in it. It took 40 minutes, and we were in a bunch of traffic between downtown Seoul and Panmunjom, which is one of the most incredibly heavily fortified places on the planet. We do not want to provoke North Korea, and if we recognize the reality that what they want is survival, we have to accept that. We are not in a position to stop North Korea from developing nuclear weapons, and I believe it is somewhat stabilizing that they apparently have them, or at least we think they have them. It reduces our options, and I spent most of my life, as most of us did listening, knowing that China or the Soviet Union had the ability. It's called mutually assured destruction, and it has been in many ways one of the most stabilizing elements of the last half century globally. We've simply arrived at that stage with North Korea.
Yeah. What if the president asked you as an expert to go over there and talk to Kim and say, what do you want? How would you deal with a man?
If the president asked me that, I would say I don't need to sit on a plane across the Pacific for 16 hours, as I've done regularly for my entire life. I already know what he wants. They want to survive. They don't want to disappear into South Korea where the way the East German regime disappeared into West Germany. That's what they want.
Well, that's a good point.
Thank you, David. Okay, I'm so sorry. I guess I cut him out a little prematurely. Let's go to Kevin in Melrose. Kevin in Melrose. Yeah, you're on, Kevin.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just had a quick question for you. You know, when we went into Iraq, the whole premise for that was they have weapons of mass destruction, and come to find out 15 years later, the weapons, they don't appear to be what they say they were. Now, my question is, are we overstating North Korea's ability to hit the United States? Every report that's coming out now is they can hit any part of the United States they want. Now, in the last couple of months, they said,
well, let me jump in here. The way these things tend to work, reality doesn't hit until the buttons are pushed and the bombs go off. Right now, what matters is perception. And professional experts seem to tell us that it looks like they have arrived at this stage. Now, the comparison with Iraq is, I think, rather different simply because there were an enormous number of people in the establishment, shall we say, of such people did not think that Saddam Hussein had such weapons. I was in this room, you know, in 2002 when we were arguing about this before the invasion and as it went off in 2003. But again, what matters now is not whether they have the weapons or not. Decision making begins in the human mind and the perception that they have or do not have, or, and this is the dangerous one, are about to have. All those perceptions, which are not based in reality, but perception, are going to drive the next decisions.
Or whether or not only they have or about to have, but whether they will use, right? Whether they there, and there are people in this country,
absolutely,
and in this establishment who think that they're going to send one our way.
One of the best books in global international relations is a book I named Stossinger, dead for years now, on misperception and war.
He was my professor.
Oh, well, then you are very lucky if you know Stossinger's work.
Yeah,
you know that book?
We always called it Stossinger. Actually, he won the Bancroft Prize, I think.
He was a genius. Yeah. And that book is about reality sets in when the wars go off.
Yeah.
Wars begin and end in the human mind.
Okay, thank you for that. All right, and now we're going to go to, we're going to definitely go to Jay in Porter Corners. I want to give that phone number, 1-800-348-2551, Jay in Porter Corners. Okay, go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, the professor said that they might be scared we're going to attack them if they take the example of Saddam Hussein and the Taliban. Well, you got to remember, the Taliban attacked us first and our assets. So it was a retaliatory strike. And also, Saddam Hussein was sitting on top of the middle of the world that we are most interested in because that's where the oil is. I don't really think there's any strategic value to Korea, per se, other than the fact that they're near our allies. And if somebody's trying to survive, it's only the one family, so to speak, and the family of one, actually. I don't think the guy's married with a long line of descendants. So I can't buy into this. And I agree with the other guy that said that most countries aren't suicidal. Now, if I had anything to do with it, I'd give the guy a missile that could strike anywhere on the planet and say, you feel safer now? I think a lot of this is just pushed to get public opinion behind what our current administration wants. And John F. Kennedy, when we almost went to war with Khrushchev, had it right. He says people are basically people when you get right down to it. So tell me your thoughts.
Well, first of all, and I agree with a number of different things you said, but first of all, with Afghanistan, we were not attacked by the Taliban. Taliban is a local, regional organization. We were attacked by their allies.
I'm not talking about Afghanistan.
Let's put it in a context.
I'm talking about when they put those missiles into the towers.
With Afghanistan, we were attacked by Al-Qaeda, not the Taliban, though they were certainly defending Al-Qaeda. And you are absolutely right. America had a national and does have a national interest in the oil of the Middle East, however problematic that is relative to climate-busting fossil fuels. We don't have the same kind of connection to North Korea economically, but the fact of the matter is that if you are in North Korea and you know that America has an incredibly healthy relationship, economic, political, etc., geopolitical relationship with South Korea, the country that wishes to, some people anyway, absorb North Korea, that sees the North Koreans as part of a country divided, the North Koreans have every reason to think that the United States would like to have South Korea absorb North Korea. And let's be realistic. What's their last experience? We invaded North Korea in 1953. It's the second stage of the Korean War that Americans seem to forget. After we won, after we defeated the North Korean invasion of South Korea, when we should have stopped at that 38th parallel, the United States, under MacArthur, invaded North Korea right up to the north, right up to the Yalu, and pushed, basically, the Chinese to enter. So let's get some context here. The North Koreans have reason to be afraid of us.
Okay, thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Frank in Schenectady. All right, Frank, it's your turn.
Hello?
Hey, Frank, go ahead.
Yeah, number one, I want to commend you on the quality of your guests here and also the callers, and just using a metaphor, sometimes the best surgeon is the one that knows when not to operate.
Yes.
My view is the best thing to do right now is nothing. And my own context does not start with China getting the bomb in 1964, but right after World War II, the idea we had to take out the Soviet Union before they got the bomb. But I think the other thing you're leaving out is I agree the North Koreans are self-defense, but beyond self-defense, it's a matter of pride. You know, I grew up being proud that the United States invented the bomb, and with that idea, we got to give any other credit to citizens of any other country to take pride that they have a bomb. You know, countries want to join the nuclear club, and then at some point, we decided the nuclear club ought to be so big.
And that issue of national pride is enormously important. In South Asia, they talked for years about the Hindu bomb. It's a real issue. You're absolutely right.
The other thing is the delivery system, and we got the land, sea, and air, and we're very, very proud of our land, sea, and air. We have the President of the United States has made two trips to aircraft carriers that are part of the delivery system, along with the old SAC bombers and the nuclear submarines around the world, and the land-based intercontinentals. So the fact of the matter is North Korea, along with being self-defense, I think it's a matter of pride.
But I would add the third thing. If the essence of nuclear weapons is to save the North Korean regime, then firing the nuclear weapons are as great as not having them.
Yeah. And I think our Secretary of State Tillerson, for the first time, has basically seemed to have said something sensible the last few days, at least in diffusing it, saying that North Korea is not our enemy, and we're not looking for a regime change there.
Well, there's obviously a reason he's saying that, because he understands that that's their number one priority. That's their number one priority for not happening.
Let me throw in something that most people are going to probably not have thought about. The Secretary of Defense is very famous, and this was for a long time when he was a young officer, walking around carrying a book called Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, the great military leader, emperor of Rome, who was obsessed, the greatest writer of Stoicism, which is about duty and accepting reality, keeping your emotions under control. I personally find it rather comforting that the Secretary of Defense of the United States, General Mattis, is
Mad Dog.
Mad Dog, but not really, obsessed with the greatest work of Stoicism ever written.
Thank you, Frank. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Mike in Pleasant Valley. Mike, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
quite well.
Okay, great. So my question is this. Does the United States have the discipline to starve the people of North Korea with our loose coalition of allies and UN partners? Because really, sanctions, I think the point of that is to basically starve the people to such a degree that they force the leader to stop doing what they're doing. And do you really think that we would have that kind of discipline and that strength of a coalition to follow through with that?
Well, as a practical matter, when we're talking about national survival, people will accept an enormous range of sacrifices, particularly people living under an incredibly dictatorial regime that, quite frankly, has a neighbor, China, that doesn't like it. But the last thing China wants is a North Korea so weak that it collapses and becomes part of South Korea. China does not want a newly reinvigorated Korean Peninsula close to an America right on its border. So China has a lot of reason to perhaps wish North Korea would act differently, but the last thing China wants is a particularly weak North Korea.
Okay, Mike, thank you. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll take a very short break, then we'll come back and talk to Larry and Anthony and anybody else who calls 1-800-348-2551.
Support for WMC comes from the Poughkeepsie Public Library District, offering 3D printing and design services for artists, inventors, and repair technicians, POKLIB.org. Coleman Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, CNHArchitects.com. Interim Healthcare, for 46 years, providing home care for individuals, companions, aides, and nurses, serving the Greater Capital Region, Columbia, and Saratoga Counties, and Glens Falls, interimhealthcare.com. Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 15 years, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins, grapesandgrainswine.com. And Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services including legal publishing and corporate record searches, ColbyService.com.
The book is East and Southeast Asia by Stephen A. Lebo, distinguished professor in our area. And the name of the book is The World Today Series, 2016 to 2017. It's about to come out again.
In the next couple of days.
17,
yeah.
18. Okay. Yeah. And so your chances of getting in right now are very good. We don't have that much time. We do have a third of the program. We'll go to Larry in on the Northway. Maybe he's not still on the Northway. Larry, are you still there?
Yes, I still am.
Okay.
You can hear me, I hope.
We can.
You're coming through very well, actually.
Okay. I recollect reading that after the Russo-Japanese War in 1905, the Koreans appealed to Theodore Roosevelt to protect them from the Japanese, and Theodore Roosevelt did not, and Japan annexed Korea and lost Korea only as a result of World War II.
Well, actually, the Japanese move into Korea is considerably earlier than that. It's really tied up with the Sino-Japanese War of 1894. And it just gets progressively more and more and more as Korea is deeply absorbed into Japan and pulled out of the orbit of China. But yeah, the United States was involved in a number of different ways, but we were never in a position to stop the fact that Korea turned into a colony of Japan.
But I recall reading that the Korean emperor appealed to Roosevelt, and Roosevelt would not assist them.
Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, they were interested in getting American support. And there was a guy named Owen Nickerson Denny who was there earlier than that, Russell Young. There were a lot of Americans. And we did have something of a relationship. Ironically, one of our first encounters with Korea, this is a number of years earlier than that, was an American brigadier pirate ship that was sort of attacking Koreans, but then it got stuck and the Koreans killed all the Americans on the ship. We have a very complicated relationship with Korea.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Larry. Appreciate your call. All right. And now we have lots of phone lines open. We'll go to Anthony in Albany. All right, Anthony in Albany, you're on. We cannot hear you. Something is not right with your phone. Sounds like you're under the East River somewhere. Can you make a change? I'm sorry. Okay, sorry about that, Anthony. Okay. And we'll go to Elliot in Sharon Springs. Okay, Elliot in Sharon Springs, you're on.
First of all, it's wonderful to hear somebody talking about Korea in a realistic way and understanding that from Kim Jong-un's perspective, the U.S. is the aggressor. But given that perspective and given the perspective that he sees a nuclear weapon as his only way of surviving as a country, I just want to pose an interesting idea. What if Kim Jong-un said, as a negotiating position, said, yes, I will consider stopping our nuclear our defensive nuclear program if the U.S. will stop their offensive nuclear program?
Well, I wouldn't hold my breath on that, but it is absolutely true that at various points the North Korean regime has not only tried to improve relations with the United States, they gave Secretary Albright really quite a reception, but they have wanted outright promises from us that we would not attack them. But as a practical matter, those were things they did at an earlier stage when they saw themselves less vulnerable. I do not think the door is ever going to open again. If they really have, and they're the only ones who know and don't really know until they actually test the stuff, but if they believe they have the ability to attack the United States with nuclear weapons, they're not going to go backwards. They have arrived most likely at a sense of security that they've been trying to gain for decades. And that, as I said, is frightening for us, but also, I believe, can open the door to greater stability. Mutually assured destruction had lots of advantages.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. All right, we got a note from Joan in Essex who said, I thought way back in the Reagan administration we were building Star Wars anti-missile program. What happened to it? Why can't we rely on it to defend the mainland against incoming missiles?
Well, the fact of the matter is that for generations, decades now, anti-ballistic missile systems, putting aside the diplomatic complications of those things in terms of our relations with the Soviet Union, have been progressing. There are such missile-destroying systems. We just recently put something up under the Obama administration in Alaska specifically with this purpose. The problem, though, is that those kinds of systems can easily be dealt with simply by overwhelming them. And when you're dealing with nuclear weapons, only one of them has to get through. So are we in a position to perhaps shoot some of these? There's been a lot of significant progress. The Israelis have made more progress on things as they get closer. The way you want to do them, frankly, is to attack a missile silo as they're starting to take off out of the ground, which means you're bombing the other country. So yes, that gives us some greater confidence, but the bottom line is that's not how we protect ourselves from nuclear weapons or any other assault of that sort.
And over to Richard in Ravenna. Okay, Richard, you're on.
Hey there. Good afternoon, and thank you very much. Hi, Alan, and hi, sir. Here's my comment. I've read the book, a wonderful book by Suki Kim, titled Without You, There Is No Us. It was about an American, a Korean American who went into North Korea supposedly as a teacher. Wonderful insights to the community. But I'm wondering, have you seen that book and are you familiar with it? And is it authentic? Is what she writes really? It's hard to tell if.
If you're asking me, I've heard of the book. I have not read it. There's a lot of books out about life inside North Korea. They tend to be, however, factual. Quite dated from people who left a number of years ago. And if you go back in time, North Korea, as China was turning toward the market economy, the Soviet Union collapsed, etc., went through a period of horrendous suffering, and the people in these massive concentration camps even more so. In more recent years, North Korea, at least for that elite that supports the regime, has been doing a lot better simply because the regime has backed off of that absolute Maoist command economy where the government supplies all of the food. They have allowed a kind of entrepreneurship of the sort that early Deng Xiaoping did, Doi Moi in Vietnam. And so the economy is actually doing better in North Korea because the government has backed off and allowed human initiative for no other reason than the fact that the government decided they could not supply the food people needed. So it's actually a lot better than it was a few years ago.
Thank you, Richard. Okay, and now we're going to go to Greg in East Meredith. Okay, Greg, your turn. Hi, Greg.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking the call. Hi. I hope you can hear me.
Okay.
I'm just curious. It's kind of a two-part thing. Do you think the sanctions was worthwhile to do? And number two, if you were the president of the U.S., just kind of going forward, what would you do? Would you do nothing in terms of North Korea? Would you try to open up a channel of communication as an expert in the area? You know, what would you actually do if you were president?
Well, under the right circumstances, as, let's say, Bill Clinton found in the mid-1990s, a more open regime, the transition Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il, in the middle of economic problems, we were in a position to offer, as a previous caller suggested, oil. We were trying to get them to back off of those nuclear plants, different kinds of nuclear technology and food, and they were open. But you have to have the right moment. I don't think that the North Korean regime right now, which is less desperate economically because of the things I just talked about, and feeling more confident, is in a place where they are likely to compromise. I mean, the fact of the matter is compromise happens when both sides need to compromise. The great Camp David Accords with Begin and Jimmy Carter were in the aftermath of the Israeli embarrassment of the Yom Kippur War. Those kind of moments happen from time to time, but I don't think we are there right now.
So we basically do nothing then, if you were president?
Right now, I don't think we have any options, and the single biggest issue that we're concerned about is that North Korea is in a position to attack us, and of course, they know we are in a position to totally devastate them. That can offer, as I said, a nice sense of stability. This is kind of like the Cold War and a minor version, frankly.
Thank you, Greg. Okay, we'll go to Mike in East Greenbush. Mike in East Greenbush, you're on.
Good afternoon. You had an earlier caller saying that no rational country's ever committed suicide. Well, this country's not rational. My point is this man's a dictator, and he wants to stay in power no matter what by keeping his people under a war footing. So I don't think there's any appeasing this man. I don't think I don't know what the solution is, but...
Well, it's survival, but it's the same issue. Wanting to maintain the stability and survival of the regime means domestically totally controlling the lives of people there, and internationally it means having nuclear weapons. There is an absolute consistency. This is really quite rational, even if the man is vicious and murdered a good chunk of his family and most recently, of course, his half-brother.
Well,
but dictators are not necessarily crazy.
Internet,
they're just
dictators. Into that country.
Pardon
so people me? Are going to start becoming aware of what's going on in the outside world.
Oh, people in North Korea already know what's going on. In the era of digital technology and the information revolution, you know, flash disks and things of that sort are so small. Phones are so small. People smuggle in all the time. They are watching movies. They know what's going on in South Korea. They know what's going on in the world because the things that carry information in the 21st century can be hidden. And there's all sorts of people passing back and forth across the river between Northeast China and North Korea. They do know what's going on now.
Well, I still think Kim's big objective is to stay in power no matter what.
I agree, which includes not getting
I think if it means
attacked.
Committing suicide, I think he's willing
well,
to do it. I don't know.
Well, suicide doesn't keep you in power. It keeps you dead.
Well, true, true.
I think this is about survival in both contexts.
True.
Regime survival and the survival of the country.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, we'll go to Tom in Monterey. And after him, there's nobody on the phone, so if you want a chance, now's a good time to do it. 1-800-348-2551. Tom in Monterey, you're on.
Hi, I have two related questions. The first question is it acceptable if North Korea has 50 or 100 ICBMs that can strike the United States? And secondly, if North Korea fell further and further behind economically and they had many nuclear weapons, might they not use those weapons, the threat of the weapons, to exact tribute from the United States? And might that not, in turn, lead to nuclear war?
Well, actually, a lot of people have followed the same logic you just suggested, that they used the effort to build up their nuclear arsenal and their missiles as a way to blackmail, to get attention from the rest of the world, to get that kind of help that they got in the agreed framework of the 1990s. So in some sense, they have followed that path. They were using their buildup. But the bottom line is, it's all about survival, and they perceive those weapons as being something that will help them survive. Is it acceptable that they have nuclear weapons? I don't think it's acceptable that anybody has a weapon that can destroy, you know, a huge percentage of humanity. I don't like any of the above.
But China and Russia are not threatened with economic demise. North Korea might be, and therefore they might be more willing to use the threat of their nuclear weapons than China or Russia ever would.
In the first years of China developing nuclear weapons, they were in the middle of a horrendous cultural revolution. They had just passed through the Great Leap Forward when, 50 million people died. Those things have happened, and hopefully we are going to survive this challenge. But North Korea economically is actually doing better these days.
That doesn't mean they will continue to do better as the world advances economically.
I completely agree. Frankly, I'd be delighted to see them collapse.
My first question, is it acceptable for them to have 50 nuclear weapons that can hit the United States? Is that acceptable?
Is it acceptable? I think that's kind of a relevant question. The reality is they have them, and there are no acceptable ways for us to eliminate the threat. There's the question. Is there an acceptable way to deal with the fact that they have developed, apparently, these weapons?
Well, Tom, you got an answer to that one?
Well, not sufficient, but I got an answer.
What's your answer?
I don't know what the answer is, but
What do we do?
There are terrible alternative consequences.
We should invade North
and
Korea?
Obviously, attacking North Korea would lead to terrible, terrible results. But having North Korea attack the United States with 50 nuclear weapons would lead to more terrible results.
Well, they're only going to attack us if we attack them, because the weapons are about protecting that regime.
Okay, so what if they fire one off and fire it and hit something Japanese? What do we do then?
Oh, well, then we are close your eyes and hold your butt. Yeah. It's going to be an extremely explosive world. And again, do remember that if we find ourselves attacking North Korea, we are attacking and creating tremendous devastation right next to our ally South Korea and our on-again, off-again, reasonably good relations, bad relations, China. This is very, very complicated. I think we're moving into an era that we do not like, but is more stable and is just as terrifying and yet stabilizing as the Cold War.
Thank you, Tom. Okay, I'm going to go to Ann in New Paltz, and that'll probably be the last call. And Ann, you got to ask it real quick, or we're going to cut you off. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling to thank Professor Lebo for educating us on what really is going on in North Korea. And it's very good to hear that it's more stable, they're doing better economically, and that to hear someone who knows what's going on, that this is all about self-protection, as I think is so logical. And if anyone who analyzes it would come up with that. But it's good to hear an expert say this because of all the ramping up that's going on in the news.
Thanks, Ann.
Well, I appreciate it.
It makes me feel so much better. Thank you.
Bye. All right. Because she was so brief, Marta, you got a one-sentence question.
Okay, Alan, thank you for taking my call. I just feel like this is warmongering, and when everyone has what they need, when everyone has enough, it's good for everyone. North Korea's been starving a long time and starving them out more and putting threatening weapons on the border, on South Korea's
border.
Okay,
we're going to stop there, Stephen?
Actually,
in terms of economic devastation, starvation, North Korea has already passed. They changed their economy just enough to improve the situation.
Thank you very much, Marta. And Kathy, we're sorry we left you on the phone, but Kathy says the professor is so rational. So there you go. We're just about out of time. Thanks, everybody. I also want to thank our good friend Stephen Lebo, an essayist for WAMC, a commentator, and the author of East and Southeast Asia by Stephen A. Lebo. You might want to get a hold of it, the World Today series. And a new version about to come out. Support for the Vox Pop comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy. homes and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. Basin Harbor Lake Champlain, Vermont. Lakefront accommodations for vacations, weddings, and conferences, featuring a championship golf course and new boat club with 40 slips for overnight stays. BasinHarbor.com for details. And Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts. Conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care, and health services since 1998. WindyHollowVet.com. Thanks again for joining us. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by our Colleen O'Connell. Your producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.